It's still too hot. Sunday, July 7th, 2013. I'm Scott Simpson. This is Maritime Morning. It's too hot. So we'll start you off with what you need to do if you're determined to go hiking in this heat. I don't know why you would, but some people like that. Outdoors lover Jim Sear will be in. Actually, he is in. He's sitting right across from me, and I forgot to tell him before he got here that the air conditioner blew up yesterday. I think he can take it. Teaching jobs are hard to come by in New Brunswick. We talked to one teaching college grad who's been looking for full-time work for 2 years, and now she wonders why universities keep cranking out new teachers when nobody's hiring. Halifax is 2 days into the annual Jazz Festival, one of the city's premier artistic events. The artistic director will join us for a look at the talent on tap from now until July 13th. A man whose daughter killed herself 10 years ago is cycling across Canada to encourage conversations about depression, suicide, and other mental health issues that affect youth and young adults. We'll hear about Hillary's Ride. Roger Haino with Business at 10, and we'll hear from Auto Trader about how Canadians prefer different kinds of cars than Europeans. No surprise that there are variations, but are the specifics what you would expect? Harv joins me for a sports chat at 10:30. Then I get to catch up with an old friend and colleague from the early days of this radio station. Laura Simpson used to be a reporter here. She's doing some really cool stuff right now. Hear how she's been hosting concerts in her house. That's right, her home has become a part-time concert venue. She actually sells tickets. Hey, do you need to holler at me about something today? 405-6000 is the Halifax studio number, or toll free at 1-877-801-8255. We tweet at MM Weekend. I have finally hit 1,500 followers today at Simpson957. You can email me at scott.simpson@rci.rogers.com. Our first guest is regularly seen on Twitter. Jim Sear is also the boss man at avoidingchores.com, where he writes about beer and gadgets and knives and tomahawks. Neat stuff. He also hikes a lot, and he's joining us today to talk about doing that in this summer heat. Good day, Jim.
Hey, Scott, how's it going?
It's too warm for my liking. I'm a sitting still in the heat kind of guy, whereas you like moving.
Well, I like moving because it keeps you cool, keeps the bugs off you. So that's always a big plus there. But, you know, a day like today, as you mentioned there, a lot of people are hiking. I saw on Twitter this morning people were going to attempt Cape Split today as a nice coastal hike and stuff. But hot weather, you got to do a few different things to adjust to be comfortable while you're out hiking. So I brought with me today my hot weather kit.
What is in a hiker's hot weather kit?
Well, basically, you hear about hikers talking about their EDCs, their kit, their everyday carry. So based on the distance that they hike and those season, they'll pack the essentials. But for summer hiking, you do want to switch out a few things. So one thing is obviously water. You got to bring a lot of water. I do recommend probably what's called a camelback or Pelipus, one of these water bladders, so you can hold about 2 liters. And the pack that I'm holding this in, it's kind of made for that. So it's a little bit bigger than the camelback itself. So it's probably maybe a 10-liter capacity bag. So it's about half the size of a regular backpack that you would wear.
10 liters?
Yeah. Well,
would you drink 10 liters?
Well, the thing is, you only put 2 liters in the bladder.
Uh-huh.
And then you have just enough room here for a little bit of food, a little bit of snacks.
Oh, the bag holds 10 liters of everything.
Yeah, of everything. Oh, I get it. Yeah, and with it, so it's small, fits up high on your back, so it's not cumbersome for you. So you would wear that. And you also pick up a few things from the running community. So if you were driving in this morning, you saw all the runners out of the running room, like I run out of the Bedford running room. And, you know, this time of year, you would use these little capsules or gels or goos, that they call them, to help you.
Goos?
Yeah, goos, or this one here is called none. But basically, these are little capsules that you put in your water, either your water bottle or your bladder, and basically what it will do is help you replace electrolytes because you're going to be sweating a lot today.
Okay, right? So the kind of thing that Gatorade claims to do, this probably does, but with a lot less sugar.
Yeah, less sugar, and you can control the amount. So you can also use Gatorade. You know, they mentioned mixing it up half and half with your water.
Well, John Gillis, who's in here once a week with our House Calls health segment, he recommends that. He's an avid rugby player. He suggests watering it down.
Exactly. So these little capsules are really good because 'cause they're designed to do about 500 milliliters. Mm-hmm. So if you're carrying like a little water bottle with you, along with the bladder or the Camelback, then you can just put that into the bottle and drink it as you go. So it gives you a good mix there.
Now, when you talk about drinking out of a bladder, that sounds disgusting. That
I should say it was a Camelback.
That's a Camelback. For people who haven't seen one of these, it just looks like a small version of somebody's school backpack, but it's got a hose coming out of it.
Yeah, a little hose coming out of it. You'll see cyclists or some of the runners, trail runners, they use this. And what you can do is you can fill it up with water, put it in the fridge overnight so it's nice and cool. Or you can fill it with ice, take a nice cube tray, fill it in, and then put water in that. So you have cool water for a few hours as you're on the trail. So that's always good. And this model here has a little thermal covering so that it stays a little bit cooler, a little bit longer. So it's pretty nice.
So it's not designed, I get, and pardon my dumb questions, because these are all questions that somebody who actually goes outside probably wouldn't be asking. But is this designed to cool my back too, or is that just a side effect?
No, it's just a side effect. It does cool your back a little bit, depending on how much ice you put in. But it does work out. But it does, after a few hours, it will get warm so that, sure. You know, just like anything else.
So that is where you put the things you're carrying and your water. Why not just bring bottles of water?
Well, you know, it's cumbersome. What are you going to do when the bottles are empty? People tend to chuck the bottles. So this is more or less your reusable water bottle. And you can fill out more. It's cheaper, too. And you can just fill it up from the tap. You don't have to pay a few dollars at the store. Or if you forget it, you know, if you forget, you say, oh, I'm going to buy some water on the way out, and you kind of forget. Or you bring the wrong size, or you don't bring enough. So 2 liters is pretty much on a day like today, pretty much, you know, as much as, you know, minimum required.
That sounds reasonable. What does a backpack like this cost?
This range between maybe $40 to $80 based on the brands. If you go to Trail Shop on Quinpool Road here in Halifax, they have a bunch of versions here that you can try out, and they got some additional features and zips and stuff. So this is a little bit older bag, but basically the same type of design.
Nice. It looks lightweight, and is it good? If, say, the weather changes from super hot and humid like this to, I don't know, rain, is that going to protect my gear?
Yeah, well, you know, you can, this is, you know, same type of nylon coating that you see for regular backpacks, so it'd be a little bit more water resistant. Some of the pockets where you put your keys or your smartphone has a little extra plastic covering inside, so that would keep your gear dry. And it's also a bag like this, it's big enough to actually hold a little bit of a rain suit or a rain jacket.
Okay.
Remember last time I talked about frog togs?
Yeah, because last time we were experiencing the weather like it was most of this summer, which was wet.
Yeah. So this bag, you still have enough room for that. You have enough room to carry suntan lotion, first aid kit, and, you know, GPS, and a little snack to eat.
Okay, so that goes on your back. Mm-hmm. 2 liters of water carries your stuff. What else do we need to consider on a hot day like this? You've got something on your head which looks very handy.
Yes, well, I'm wearing the buff. And if you watch Survivor, you've seen all the contestants, they wear the same headband or neck scarf. Well, the company that makes that is called Buff. And again, you can go down to the Trail Shop on Quinpool. They sell a whole array and designs and stuff. But it's a very versatile, multi-use headwear. You can wear it as a bandana, neck scarf, wrist, you know, if ponytail, if, you know, if we had
hair.
Yeah. And also you can put that on your head and pour water on it, and that helps you cool off a bit. Or you wet the buff and you just wear it as around your neck, and that cools you down too. So it's very versatile in the warmer weather. And it also keeps the sweat off.
And the sun.
Yeah,
too, for those of us, again, without the hair.
Yeah, so you can wear it in different styles. Like I'm wearing it right now as a legionnaire style. So it covers the back of the neck. So if you're walking, you know, we try to recommend wearing a wide brim hat. But if people prefer wearing baseball caps, well, you can wear this on your head and then wear the cap on top. So at least it protects the back of your neck.
I'm trying to imagine all the things that would make me so uncomfortable I would stop and ask you how to avoid that. Sunglasses sliding down your nose.
Well, you can get some of the more, again, the running style glasses with the rubber nose piece there. So that stays up pretty good, too. And also with the way that they clip around your ear, so that helps you stay up. Same thing, why you want to use the sports sunscreen that tends to not be as runny or as slick as the regular suntan lotion. The other stuff you want to look at is light colored shirts. So there's a lot of, mesh style shirts that will help you keep cool and help keep the sweat off. And also some of the new tech material pants or running pants or convertible pants that convert into shorts. Oh. So let's say you start off and the bugs are bothering you. Well, you can keep the pants on. But if you reach the beach, if you're doing a coastal trail, you can zip them off and, at least dip your toes into the water without getting your pants wet.
So. Oh, that's so nice. Well, you make it sound like somebody could do this. All things considered, you have all the preparation stuff. Is this comfortable weather for you to go outside?
It's getting towards the end of when I would like to come out. Again, with the runners, they probably went out early this morning, so I probably would have hit the trail probably around 7 o'clock this morning. It was a chilly 19 degrees around then, so the early start would be better, so that if you're doing a 2 to 4 hour hike, you're probably halfway done by now, and then the walk back would probably be not as arduous as if you were to start now and you hit at 12 o'clock. That's the height of the day.
Yeah.
So
well, yeah, exactly. That's another part, is plan your day so that you're not doing your heavy exertion at the peak of the sunshine. I did see a guy looking like he was straight out of a Gillette commercial running down St. Margaret's Bay Road with no shirt on this morning as I drove in my air-conditioned car. Thanks, Jim. We can find more from you on Twitter at TheCyr, C-Y-R.
Yep.
And on the web at avoidingchores.com. And you have obviously a ton of stuff on YouTube. So if you want to see what you look like, Jim.
That's right.
With your buff on.
Yeah, with the buff on and the chapeau, the hat.
Well, yes, the most famous picture of you is with your chapeau.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for being here.
No problem, sir.
And have a safe day out there. And I'm sorry it couldn't be cooler in here. It would be nice to give you a break from the heat.
Good thing I got my buff on.
You have your buff on. Coming up in just a minute, you go to school, you get your university degree, you graduate, and you realize, wait a minute. There are way more people graduating from my class than there are jobs available. Well, if this keeps happening year after year, why do they keep training people for these jobs? We'll discuss that with regard to teaching next on Maritime Morning. Teaching is a noble profession. It's nice to want to shape young minds and build futures lesson by lesson. But just because you want to do so, and just because you have training, maybe you're even gifted at it, doesn't mean you'll be able to find work in the field. Some wannabe teachers are wondering why universities are still training so many teachers when the jobs are not there. Let's have a conversation about this with Amy McPherson, who lives just outside St. John. So, Amy, when did you get your degree?
2011 was when I graduated, July of 2011.
And have you been working since?
Very little.
Oh, no.
My first year was very challenging. I made about $10,000 for the whole year.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's before taxes, of course, and union dues. So it was very challenging. And this year I did significantly better, but I really lucked into a long-term supply. So I'm back on the supply list as of June and fighting for work again for year three.
I hear it's hard to even get on the supply list.
It's very difficult to get on the supply list. They had shut it down for, I think, 6 months last year, but they had reopened it again and were adding people. But most of the people that were getting added weren't getting many calls.
So what's the problem then? I'll put it to you bluntly. Are you not good enough or the job's not there?
We have excellent teachers in this province, and the training programs are really, really good. We just have too many teachers in the province. There's not enough demand, and there have been many cuts, as there have been in other provinces, so jobs are getting cut. There's not new jobs being created to replace those positions, and there's just simply not enough work to go around.
But the schools keep making new teachers.
Mm-hmm, they do.
Is that part of the problem?
I believe it is, and I received some comments on my last interview saying, why should we care what people take in school? Well, these universities are publicly funded, so I think we should care because our taxpayer dollars are helping to pay for these schools to train people for jobs that don't exist. So that's where I think the disconnect is.
Oh, do these universities teach you to be a New Brunswick teacher or a teacher in general?
Absolutely not, no. It gives you an education degree you can use anywhere in the world. So we can certainly travel and go away to work, and that's been the solution proposed by a few people. But even traveling and going away doesn't necessarily give you a job when you come home. I have a sister who worked in the Middle East for 10 years before returning back to the Maritimes. Almost 7 years ago, I believe she's been in the Maritimes for 7 years and still isn't working. So sometimes experience is a good thing, but usually you're being paid more at that level, so it's hard to get a job for that reason.
I've never really heard of a school saying that you can't, that we're not going to run a program because there's not jobs for it. Mm-hmm. I always figured it was, you know, it's up to the applicant to decide whether the course they want to take will lead to employment in the future. Where am I wrong with that?
No, I agree with you 100%. It certainly is buyer beware, and you have to research the programs you're taking and research the market that you hope to work in. For me, I knew there weren't a lot of jobs. I thought I'd be supplying for many years before I secured a job. I just didn't expect there to be so little supply work. In fact, not enough to live on. So I certainly don't expect the schools to cut programs. That was just a suggestion I made. And I didn't mean permanently cut them. I just meant perhaps for a year or two, take the staff from the university and create a task force with some new teachers, some experienced teachers, with government officials, and come up with a plan for the future where perhaps we're investing some money in the classroom, some short-term pain for some long-term gain, because that's what's needed right now. Our classrooms are fully inclusive, and we need help in the classrooms.
Oh, so you're thinking of an even bigger rethink of how teachers and classrooms are paired up?
Absolutely. 100%. Now that we're fully inclusive, I believe every classroom needs one educational assistant. At minimum, we have EAs for students who have a need, but since the classrooms are inclusive, we have a lot of needs, a lot of varied needs in the class, and it's very difficult to accomplish the curriculum objectives you need to accomplish without some help in the classroom, dealing with behavioral issues and different things, learning disabilities. Some students just need a little bit of extra help, and the teachers are really kind of on their own.
Well, that's certainly a lot more expansive than just saying, let's shut down the teacher factory for a little while.
Exactly, and that wasn't my point at all. I didn't expect that to be a solution. I just thought it might be a way to approach it differently. I think that we have to look at the big picture and start approaching our challenges in this province more proactively instead of always reactively. I think it's time for us to model the behaviors we expect our students to have when they graduate. The big buzzword is students have to be 21st century thinkers and have 21st century skills. I think our leaders have to start modeling that collaborative, creative thinking, outside of the box kind of behavior to get those results from our students.
Sounds expensive.
Absolutely. And I know it will be expensive, but I think in the long run, it's worth it. We've got a province that's really struggling. We have the highest rate of unemployment in the whole country right now. It's very discouraging, and very discouraging for new graduates, not just university graduates, but high school graduates. There's a lot of uncertainty.
And you think that there's a role for teachers to be among those leading the way?
Absolutely.
All right. Have you pitched this idea to anybody who has a say-so?
I haven't yet. I would love to. I'd love to talk with some people about it. I think there are so many teachers and people in general, parents too, who have incredible ideas about what could be done. It could start this year. We could have people meeting, and perhaps the following year we cut programs and have those staff leading up a task force, like I said, and coming up with a new way to approach how we teach in New Brunswick.
What are you going to do in the meantime, though? You still need to eat.
I keep expanding my offerings. I did Yoga 11 teacher training with Jenny Kirsted from Breathing Space Yoga Studio in Halifax. She is instrumental in getting yoga into the high schools. So I took that, hoping that perhaps New Brunswick would catch on and start hiring yoga teachers in their high schools. And they are, but it's slow. So I keep doing training whenever I can. My husband and I are starting a small business. We eat a lot of rice and beans. it's difficult. It's not easy not knowing when your next paycheck's coming or if it's coming. And I don't say these things for people to coddle me and feel sorry for me. I had a lot of feedback from my last interview. I'm not looking for people to feel sorry for me at all. I'm just simply trying to get the message out there that something has to change, and that if you're taking education right now, you really do have to be prepared to work elsewhere. Perhaps for your lifetime.
Amy McPherson, thanks for joining us on Maritime Morning. Definitely a lot to think about there. Are we cranking out too many people in all kinds of professions, even the people around here. I've heard for years that that there is an unreasonable number of journalists being trained by journalism schools for the number of jobs that there are in the journalism profession. And does the journalism profession exist anymore now that everybody's a multimedia specialist? Not so much a journalist. Interesting discussion for a lot of fields, not just teaching. Coming up, we'll learn a thing or two about the Jazz Festival in Halifax. That's coming up in the next half hour of Maritime Morning. 9:31 on a Sunday morning. It's a hot one. So yesterday, after the show, I was sitting in the newsroom preparing for today's show. And above me, I could hear this gurgling sound that... It sounded like somebody splashing around in a bathtub. So I get an email last night on my BlackBerry from station engineer Rodney McQuaid, who says, bad news, everybody. The air conditioner blew up. Well, he didn't say it blew up. He said it, something went very, very wrong with it. It sprung a leak. I don't really understand how office building air conditioning systems work, but somehow there's water up there. And water somehow was coming out of the ceiling into the newsroom in a flooding kind of way. I wondered why there was a bucket on the floor. There's no air conditioning here today. The hottest weekend of the year so far. So Rodney is an awesome guy, always takes great care of us. He went out and bought a couple of stand-up pedestal fans. So part of the newsroom is actually quite comfortable. This studio, though, is not. There's no hair moving in here. And I complain about the heat at the best of times. So if you hear me wheezing out here, don't worry. Don't worry. I'll just step out into the newsroom for a minute, catch my breath, and come back. Speaking of things that are breathtaking, how's that for an awkward transition? The Jazz Festival is on. I've yet to go. It happens every year, and I know it's an artistic highlight of the city's calendar, but I haven't gone. Maybe I will after learning a bit more about it from artistic director Laura Lulu Healy. Good day, Laura.
Hi, how are you?
I'm warm, as we say. How are you holding up?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm actually in an air-conditioned trailer, but it's been pretty hot down on the site. It's kind of awesome.
An air-conditioned trailer. See, if you're going to air-condition something, you want it to be something with a small space like a trailer.
Something that, small, yeah.
That sounds great. How has the festival been going so far?
It's been going so great. We've had really, really nice crowds down on the waterfront because it's so sunny and so beautiful. And there is actually a breeze down here if anyone's looking for some relief from up the hill.
And there's some shade, too. Everything's happening in tents.
Yeah, there's a tent. There's lots of refreshments. There's lots to do down here besides listen to music.
Well, we're talking to you about the listening to music part. Although, is there more to Jazz Festival than just the jazz?
There's definitely other forms of music. There's a lot of world music and funk and blues and R&B and some hip-hop, but mostly jazz and music that relates closely to jazz. But there is something for everybody if you're not a true hardcore jazz fan.
Well, tell me a bit about that, because when I think of jazz, I think an improvisational style. Mostly that's what comes to mind. I'm obviously no music critic or a connoisseur that way, but how is it branched out? What else does the Jazz Festival offer, and what would diehard jazz people recognize as the key product?
Well, we do have 11 venues running, and the indoor venues tend to have more of the improvisational forms of jazz and the true traditional capital J jazz, as we say. But the main stage, the big festival tent, is more music that is closer to mainstream. So if you're just getting into jazz or you want to try out the festival and you've never been before, you can come down and listen to Latin jazz. And it's more of a party atmosphere, party music. There's blues and funk artists from all over the world coming, and it's just a good entry point if you don't want to hear some of the more serious jazz.
Well, sure, you don't have to dive right into the to the capital J stuff.
Definitely, yeah.
Dr. John played already. How was that? I hear there was quite a crowd.
We had over 2,000 people on site, which is the best we've ever had for our opening night, and it was an amazing show. He's such a great performer, and everyone was just mesmerized by his stage presence and his artistry and his, you know, dedication and passion to performing. And the fireworks went off at 10 p.m., and nobody even noticed in the tent. They kind of turned around, and then they just, you know, quickly returned to being mesmerized by Dr. John.
I heard there might have been even more people there than you expected to show up.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, we were really happy with the turnout.
Who's still to come? Who are some of the big names people might have recognized, or if they don't recognize them yet, that they will hear people talking about?
Definitely people will recognize the Wailers. They're coming to town, Bob Marley's Wailers, on Friday, July 12th, and they'll be down here at the festival tent site. We have Lee Fields and The Expressions coming from Brooklyn, a soul group, and Dave Douglas coming from New York, and Lee Konitz is coming from New York. We have the Gabriel Alegria Peruvian Sextet coming all the way from Peru, and that's a free concert on Tuesday night at the festival tent site. And hundreds of local musicians playing for free all day long from noon until 5 p.m. of every day if you want to come down and eat your lunch and listen to some great music. The lineup is quite extensive.
Yeah, tell me a bit about some of the local talent that people will be able to see.
The local talent is, there's a really broad spectrum of genres and different groups. There's big bands today at the festival tent site, so traditional jazz big bands. We have Gypsophilia played on Friday night, Cindy Kane, soul music. We have Tom Swift as more blues folk. We've got J.R. Smith is playing tonight at the Company House, and he's a young drummer who is really up and coming, and I feel like that's going to be a highlight of the festival tonight.
I think I saw Tom Swift opening for Bare Naked Ladies a few years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
he's really great.
Yeah. It's good to hear that some of it's free. What parts need to be paid for?
The ticketed shows are most of the indoor concerts, and there's three free shows at the festival tent site in the evening. So tomorrow night, Monday, and then Tuesday, and then the final Saturday is a huge Latin dance party, which will be free to the public. And there's also a concert at the Marquee that we're hosting for free on the 13th.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Where is this all happening? Obviously, you just mentioned the Marquee. If somebody wants to drop in for some of the free stuff, where's the big...
Our tent site's located at the just down on the waterfront, Lower Water Street and the Salter Street extension. And it's hard to miss. We have a giant festival tent, and there's banners all around, and lots of people walking around. So it's right on the boardwalk, and it's really nice and breezy and beautiful.
How has it been going for you personally?
It's been going great.
Because as artistic director, I'm guessing the back end, the front, it's a front-heavy job for you.
It is, yeah. You know, you see us running around solving tiny crises, but it all works out when people are happy watching the shows and everybody's having a great time, especially because of how the weather has been so far. And we're having a great time.
When does work start on next year?
September. So we take a couple of weeks to wrap up this one and a short break, and then we're back at it.
Wow! Have you got your eye on anybody for next year already?
I haven't. I have a couple of people on my wish list, but I haven't even looked that far right now.
Well, I won't even ask you who they are then.
Yeah.
Okay, where can people go for the best source of information? I know you have an app, but I'm going to guess the website is probably better.
The app is actually pretty good. The website is halifaxjazzfestival.ca, and it has all of the information to buy tickets up there. And you can also come down to the festival tent site, and we have an information center, and you can talk to people about what you'd like to see and buy tickets right on site.
And I see you on Twitter at HFXJazzFest.
That's right. Yeah, we're on Facebook and all the social media avenues.
As one has to be.
Yeah.
Laura, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And good luck. Enjoy the rest of the shows.
Thanks.
Laura Lulu Healy is artistic director of the Halifax Jazz Festival, which you can find online at halifaxjazzfestival.ca. We talk a lot about mental health on this show, and for good reason. It needs talking about, and we will speak in a moment with somebody else who agrees with this. Her husband is riding a bicycle across Canada to raise the conversation. We'll have Betty Jo next on Maritime Morning. 9:44 a.m. on Sunday, the 7th of July. We talk a lot about mental health on Maritime Morning Weekend Edition. It's one of my pet topics, I guess you could say. A lot of people in my life have been touched by mental health issues, and I take it personally as part of my mission in life to let people know about this, make people with mental illness feel better able to reach out and get help, and encourage people who have a stake in the system to make it better for the people who need it. And as part of that today, I'd like to welcome Betty Jo Werthmann. I hope I pronounced your name right, yes. Betty Jo.
Hi, good morning, Scott.
Wife of Bill, who is riding across Canada on a mission to get the conversation going further. Betty Jo, can you tell me who Hillary was?
Hillary was our daughter, Bill's daughter, my stepdaughter. And she was 20 years old when she took her life 10 years ago, May 8th, which was the day that the ride started. And she had suffered with depression for a couple of years and had been seeking medical help. And at a time when we sort of thought things were turning around and moving forward in a positive direction, apparently they weren't, and she overdosed on her antidepressants. Her prescribed antidepressants, and that was May 8th, 2003. So, it took a long time. As Bill says, when he's speaking to people, it took about 8 years before he could even say the word suicide. It's not something that is easily said. And he just tried to think of a way that he could honor her life, and he is a maritime boy, but has lived in the West for a good many years, and loves country, and put it all together and came up with Hillary's Ride for Mental Health.
Well, that's quite a way to come home by bicycle.
Yes, it is. We have flown home many times, but no, he's definitely seen and smelt and felt this country. This time over. So
starting May 8th in Victoria, he began a bike ride with some friends.
Yes, yeah.
And are you traveling along too?
No, I flew out here from Edmonton yesterday, and so I'm sort of usually the background person. we put a society together called Hillary's Ride for Mental Health Society with board members and did a good year of fundraising to cover our expenses and everything. And so I just flew out yesterday to see him this afternoon. I haven't seen him since the May long weekend. And then I will fly to St. John's for the big finale.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to town.
Thank you. I've been here a few times and staying with Bill's sister and family and his mom is here and so lots of family and friends across the country for sure that took them in and fed them well and it's been amazing the charity that they've received.
So we're talking about suicide and depression specifically relating to youth and young adults. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that it's hard for a lot of people to say, talk about, think about, but it's important because it's killing way too many of our young people.
Absolutely. It's actually the second highest cause of death in adolescents next to car accidents.
Most people don't think of that.
No.
Most people think that teenagers die from, car crashes, we can understand, but
yeah.
Something else. To think that it's teenagers themselves that are killing themselves as the number two cause of death would be a surprise to a lot of people. And I think a lot of people think that if you talk about it, you're just encouraging it, but
there is that concept, absolutely.
Yeah, if you're not talking about it, though, clearly you're not doing anything about it.
That's right. And there's a lot of research, and a big article just came out recently, research about
the cause and effect, you know, and when you talk about it. And it, so it used to be when people said that, well, then let's not talk about it. If we don't say that that's what happened, then nobody else will think about it. But now what they're doing is using that research to approach the education differently. So they know if a high school student has taken their life, whether people are fully aware that that's what happened or not, they know that they need to come in with a stronger support and watch for the kids and seek them out. And so they've sort of turned it around that, yes, it does. People might think that it, you know, I didn't know that, you know, I could do that or whatever, or, but so they're approaching it differently, that instead of not talking about it, let's talk about it openly and get it on the table and encourage people. And every event that we've done across the country, we have a local charity there, and people have usually come up to them and said, you know, I need help.
If we look at depression not as some people have in years gone by, as some kind of character flaw or something to be judged or something to be cast as a personal defect, if we look at it as a potentially fatal affliction, I think we can put it in a different light and make people feel better about coming forward and getting treated, because, you know, depression can kill you. The method of death is suicide,
right?
But it can be as deadly as a cancer or any other kind of disease.
Exactly, and that's what you know. Everybody has different ways of saying it. You know, if you had cancer, your friends and family would rally around you and be there for you. But you know, when people are afflicted with mental health issues, often people shy away because they don't know what to do. And somebody said to Bill along the way, if you had a broken leg, you wouldn't walk around dragging it behind you. You would go and get it fixed. So if your mind isn't working, then go and get it fixed. And why is it okay to say at work that I'm fighting cancer, I need some time off, and nobody judges you? But if you say, you know, I'm having some mental health problems, I need some time off, then you're looked at, you know, there's the weakness and all the stereotypes come into play. So that's what a lot of this is trying to do, is open the conversation, make it okay to talk about, and so that people will feel comfortable and come forward and seek help.
It's a difficult conversation to have, because it's not as though there's a singular message that you can pass on to someone that will make everything better. But having the conversation is the doorway to finding those answers, I guess.
Yes, and I think, you know, we like things black and white. You know, for every other ailment, any physical ailment, cancer, heart disease, whatever, there's a blood test, there's an x-ray, you can see it, whereas with mental health you can't see it and there's no real test for it, you know, so it's just something that you feel, and that has a lot to do with people's acceptance of it or not acceptance of it.
Wouldn't that be great if you could just take a blood test or a pinprick or a urine test or something to say, you're depressed and there's an obvious course of treatment for this that we know works. It's so much more complicated than that. And even the kind of support that somebody would want. Part of the what's so baffling about depression is that it is an isolating disorder, that when you are depressed, you are more likely to isolate yourself and separate yourself from the very people who may want to help you the most. In Hillary's case, you say that it looked like things were getting better, which can be deceiving, because sometimes before people kill themselves, they seem remarkably at peace.
Yes. Yes, she had just graduated from a post-secondary institution in Edmonton, in a business management program with the highest marks ever received in that program, 98%. She had just quit a job that we supported because it was not a healthy environment, and was looking for summer work because she, you know, it was April, mid-April, when she was just finished writing her exams and stuff. And Bill had actually been with her that morning. He'd just been with her. He knew that she had had a bad night. A friend had called to say that they'd been on the phone talking through the night, and she had done a lot of crying and stuff. So she was in pretty rough shape when he showed up in the morning. But, you know, they went through talking about the pros and cons of life, and she showed him the jobs that she was going to apply for. She wanted to get try something different during the summer. He helped her tweak her resume, her cover letters. She was leaving for Mexico in two days for her graduation trip. And she kept saying, "I'm okay." And he was like, "Are you sure?" And so finally she was like, "Dad, I need to have a nap. I want to clean my room before I go." And she was going to print her resumes and everything. And so he left. And they figure about 90 minutes to 2 hours later she was gone. But she printed all of her resumes, put them into envelopes, addressed them, stamped them. They were all on the table ready to be mailed. And she laid down to have a nap, and it got the better of her. So, you know, she seemed to be not many people outside of her family, immediate family, not even extended family, really. Her immediate family and the closest of friends knew that she had any problems at all. She certainly, her instructors were all very, very surprised, because she was so, always came across as the light of the life, you know, big smile, big laugh, but it wore her down having to put that on over and over and over again, so.
Shouldn't have to be that hard to live.
No, it certainly shouldn't. At any age.
And the message I keep trying to get across in this show is that if you're not well, if you feel like your mind is not working right, reach out for the help you
Absolutely.
Need. And keep reaching out, because we talk about you. If you walked into an emergency room with a broken leg and your bone sticking out, mm-hmm. they'd sit you down and treat you right away. Whereas if you walk into a hospital and say, "My mind's not working well
yeah.
and I want to die," unless you are about to kill yourself, odds are you're
yeah.
not going to get help there.
Yeah.
We're just about out of time, but I do want people to be able to get in touch with your organization. And I know you have an event in Halifax tomorrow night.
Yes, we do. And our website is hillarysride.ca. And the event tomorrow night is at the Company House, and which is 2202 Gottingen,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're really involved in folk music, so we've been having concerts across the country. And each place where we have an event, we have a local organization that we have connected with. And the one in Halifax is called The Spot. And it's geared towards youth and older. And they work with through mental health, through arts, and music and stuff like that. And if you go onto the website, all of our partner organizations are listed there. There's help out there. I mean, you don't have to wait until you're at the point where, you know, just, and if you call these people, they will reach out, any of these organizations, right up to obviously the Canadian Mental Health Association. But there's lots of little grassroots organizations, and that's who we wanted to connect with, because we're grassroots ourselves.
Exactly. Okay, so, tomorrow night, 8 o'clock at the Company House, $25
yeah.
bucks, lets you see Stephen Fearing, Jim Dorey, Susan Crowe, and Kev Corbett at
yeah.
the Company House on Gottingen Street.
Yeah.
Visit hillarysride.ca, Hillary with two L's, hillarysride.ca. And
yeah.
if you want to check out The Spot, The Spot Halifax.
Yeah.
Thanks
yeah,
very much,
yeah, exactly.
Betty Jo, for being
Thank
with
you.
Us.
Thank you for listening and asking and talking. And
It's a conversation worth having, and I hope the rest of Bill's ride is comfortable. I know it's hot out there.
Yeah. Well, it's only less than a week left.
You bet.
And the big part is a ferry ride. So.
Oh, exactly. All right. Have a safe journey.
Thank you.
Betty Jo Worthman is wife of Bill Worthman, who is riding across Canada to honor his daughter's life and spirit and to help remove the stigma about talking about suicide and depression. Coming up in just a minute, we will see how cheery the numbers are next with Roger Haino from Tax Filers on Maritime Morning.